the chairman of the Council of University of Ghana and Justice of the Supreme Court of Gambia and of Ghana, Your Lordship Samuel Kofi Dadeba, the President of the National House of Chiefs of Ghana, Professor Na John S. Nabila, the Vice Chancellor of the University of Ghana, Professor Ernest Tay, the Dean of the Faculty of Law, University of Ghana, Professor Kofi Ashikan, Dean J. Reuben Clark Law School, Brigham Young University, Professor James Rasmussen, the Director of the International Center for Law and Religious Studies, J. Reuben Clark Law School, Brigham Young University, Professor Cole Durham Jr., Distinguished Assembly, I am grateful to the University of Ghana and co-organizers for the invitation to me to deliver this keynote address. I'm honored and humbled and delighted to be here at the University of Ghana, and especially as it has been brought to our attention, celebrating 65 years of your inauguration. I wish you all God's blessing upon your endeavors and work here at the Center of Learning. This eminent university is the oldest and largest of the 13 Ghanaian universities and tertiary institutions. Wikipedia describes this university as one of the best universities in Africa and by far the most prestigious in West Africa. But Wikipedia misses an important note, that the University of Ghana has the former Secretary General of the United Nations, Dr. Kofi Annan, as its Chancellor. Last month, I was at another eminent academic institution, the London School of Economics and Political Science, one of the principal social science universities in the world. I said to the staff and students there that I could proudly say I went to LSE. Now I can add to my boast the University of Ghana. The theme of the conference, Law and Religion in Africa, Comparative Practices, Experiences and Prospects, is a very apt at this stage of Africa's development. This theme is very profound and multifaceted, as the papers which will be presented reflect. I am sure we shall not be groping in the dark, as in this parable set in an African forest. A blind rabbit and a blind snake met. And since they could not make out who the other was, they decided to feel each other and say who they were. So the snake went first and began to touch the rabbit and said, "You are furry. You have long ears. You have a short, stubby tail. You are a rabbit." And the rabbit, enthusiastically jumping up and down, said, "Yes, yes, yes." Then the rabbit proceeded to touch the snake and said, "You are rather long and cold-blooded. You have beady eyes. You have a forked tongue. You are slithery and have no means of self-locomotion. You must be a lawyer." Lord Denny once advised lawyers to read works of history and literature. He cited Sir Walter Scott's novel, Guy Mannering. The client, Colonel Mannering, goes to the lawyer. He finds the rooms of the lawyer lined not with law books, but with books of history and literature. the great authors, the classics, and the painting by Jensen, the Scottish Van Dyck. The lawyer points to the books of history and literature and says, "These are my tools of trade. A lawyer without history or literature is a mere mechanic, a mere working mason. If he has some knowledge of these, he may venture to call himself an architect." It is to these tools of trade, the great authors, the classics, the music, arts, culture, politics, stories of great men and women, life happening all around us, that I turn for inspiration to address the theme of law and religion in Africa. Let me start with a book by Dr. M. Scott Perk, entitled Gifts of a Journey. He was once at a dinner talking to a clever lawyer about it before it was published. The lawyer wanted to know what the book was about. Perk explained that it was a mix of psychology and religion. The lawyer understood that, but wanted to know the message of the book. Peck said it was rather complicated, as the book said a lot of things. The lawyer persisted. All he wanted was a few sentences getting to the heart of the matter and telling what the book was about. Perk said he couldn't do that in a few sentences. That is the reason why he had written the book. The lawyer thought it was all nonsense, and he explained to Perk that in the legal profession there was a wise saying that anything worth saying can be said in two sentences or less, and if it can't be, then it is not worth listening to. I shall hastily say that this does not apply to any of us here. Peck could not give the lawyer the two sentences he required. But thinking about it later, he remembered that Jesus had a similar experience in Jerusalem, and he handled it brilliantly. You remember a lawyer came to Jesus and said, in effect, "Professor Jesus, all these parables are very nice, but what is it that you are really trying to say? What is your message? I don't want a whole sermon on the mount, I just want a few concise sentences, straight and simple. What is it you are telling us we ought to learn and to do?" Jesus responded, and it was really no more than a single sentence. "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and soul, and your neighbor as yourself." That's all he said. Now, a couple of years later, Dr. Perk finally figured out what he had been trying to say in a single sentence. And I shall tell you what it was at the next conference. Suffice to say, I too was grappling how to locate the heart of this conference, given its profundity. I have settled on the following thoughts to focus on: the unity of law and religion, justice, context, and the importance of individuals as moral agents. Let's explore the first thought on the unity of law and religion. I should state that I speak from a Christian perspective, but the principles are applicable to other faiths such as Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, and Hinduism. People often think in compartments and imagine that law and religion, or politics and religion, are separate from each other. The reality is that everything in life is interconnected. Ari Lev Stolman illustrates this in his enchanting book, The Illuminated Soul, when he writes about the net of reality. This net of reality weaves seemingly desperate things together and mix of them whole cloth. On its own, our world seems a chaos of unrelated events to the human mind. But in fact, this is not the case. This perception is only due to our limitations of observation and reason. Law and religion are two sides of social relations and human nature. As Harold Behrman has wisely stated, law is not only a body of rules, it is people legislating, adjudicating, administering, negotiating. It is a living process of allocating rights and duties, and thereby resolving conflicts and creating channels of cooperation. Religion is not only a set of doctrines and exercises, it is people manifesting a collective concern for the ultimate meaning and purpose of life. It is a shared intuition of commitment to transcendent values. Law ensures a society maintains a cohesion and peace, and hence prevents chaos, whilst religion gives society faith to pursue transcendent values that promote the good in people and the community, and hence seeks to prevent corruption. The unity between law and religion is also evident in Islam and Judaism, which have a very sophisticated system of law found in sacred writings. Some say the observance of law is itself a religious act. For example, in ancient Israel, the law, the Torah, is the religion. The second thought I suggest, which streams from the theme and will tacitly flow in the papers to be presented, is justice. Both law and religion are concerned with justice. The issue of social justice dominates the Old Testament. For example, the prophet Amos is emphatic of what God's demands of his nation, Israel, are. Let justice roar down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Lord Harris, former Bishop of Oxford, recently gave an address at the justice service at Chelmsford Cathedral in England, in which he said, if we had to choose one word to sum up the message of the Hebrew Scriptures, the Christian Old Testament, that word would be justice. A core theme is summed up by the prophet Micah. He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. This is the most fundamental insight the Jewish people have given to the world, not only in Judaism itself, but in its abiding legacy in Christianity and Islam. God is inseparable from justice, because justice is the expression of love, seeking to do the right thing or what is right in every situation. So where justice is, there is God. Justice is required in all aspects of life, in our personal lives, in our family life, in our politics, in the life of a nation, in the judicial system, in the world's economic order. Justice in the treatment of the citizen by the state, of the litigant by the judge, of customary law by statutory law, of the consumer by the supplier, of the customer by the bank, of religion by the state, of the minority by the majority, of women by culture, of gays by straits, of religious intolerance by fundamentalists, of religious pluralism by constitutions. Law and religion in Concord had a vital role to play in Africa, faced with challenges of injustices, prejudices, and corruption. As both are focused on justice as the expression of love seeking to do the right thing or what is right in any given situation. As both can interact in robust laws conceived in moral values, rooted in religious foundations that reverence all peoples made in the image of God. I believe that this conference can guide us in this regard. The third thought concerns context. Law and religion do not exist in a vacuum. They absorb their environment, such as political, social, cultural, economical, time, and historic context. The great jurist Oliver Wendell Holmes said of law, "The life of the law has not been logic. It has been experience. The felt necessities of the time, the prevalent moral and political theories, even the prejudices which judges share with their fellow men. The law embodies the story of a nation's development through many centuries, and it cannot be dealt with as if it contained only axioms and corollaries of a book of mathematics. The life of the law reflects human life, which we can imagine evolving to the rhythm of the captivating phrases of Charles Dickens' book, A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven. We were all going direct the other way." So law absorbs at different times the best, the worst, wisdom, foolishness, belief, incredulity, light, darkness, hope, despair, everything, nothing, heaven and hell. It's human life in its historic development. With this insight, legal positivism is inadequate as a philosophical position to understand the life of law. Legal positivism would argue that all you can see is all there is, and that to make judgments of value, to seek meanings or causes, to seek good and bad in political and policy questions are unscientific and run the odd risk of superstition and obscurantism. When the law sees itself in this way, that all there is the rules mechanically applied without taking into consideration the dynamic context which give it life, then the label, "the law is an ass," becomes apt. Let me give you the context in which the label arises from Charles Dickens' Oliver Twist. "That is no excuse," replied Mr. Brownlow. "You were present on the occasion of the destruction of these trinkets, and indeed are the more guilty of the two in the eye of the law. For the law supposes that your wife acts under your direction." Then Mr. Bumble said, "If the law supposes that, the law is an ass, an idiot. If that's the eye of the law is a bachelor. And the worst I wish the law is, that his eye may be opened by experience." The experience Law needs is not so much a married life, but a constant flow of moral values to bring forth justice. I think it is clear that law is principally a code of rules. It's not simply a code of rules or legal opinions, but rather a living manifestation of a collection of human stories, each with a moral, not as a fetter, but as a source of freedom, not as an unwelcome but inescapable response to the ills of society, but as a means of providing that justice which good government and social harmony fundamentally depend on. The law ideally is a reservoir of justice to remedy the ills of human injustices. The reservoir of justice we speak of has to be replenished by streams of moral values that flow from religion. It's a constant flow, cleansing and healing people and society. Now, just as the life of the law has not been logic, but experience. More so, religion is not about logic, but mystery and inspiration wrapped in God. Albert Einstein once said, "Every one of us appears here on earth involuntarily and uninvited for a short stay, without knowing the whys and wherefores." The most beautiful and deepest experience a person can have is the sense of the mysterious. It is the underlying principle of religion, as well as all serious endeavors in art and science. He who has never had this experience seems to me, if not dead, at least blind. To sense that behind anything that can be experienced, there is something that our mind cannot grasp, and whose beauty and sublimity reaches us only indirectly, and as a feeble reflection, that is religiousness. Not from logic, but the sense of the mysterious flow of the transcendent values into life, ennobling us if we are sensitive to them. So morality is not temporal, but eternal. The spirit in people responds to the good in them. It is the good and potential good in people that is the focus of religion. It is the good in people which intuitively recognizes what is justice. And law becomes the application, however imperfectly, of justice, of that good in everyday affairs. Religion conveys to us the importance of moral purpose and spiritual sense. Religion conveys, above all, the reality and importance of a power that transcends our lives and world, a power beyond ourselves, a power that loves us, a power that seeks to act through us to do justice in every situation. The fourth and final thought concerns the importance of individuals as moral agents in striving for justice in our world. Let me illustrate this in the life of Lord Denning, who embodied law and religion. In his brilliant book, Decision Making in the White House, Theodore Sarrazin concludes, "I can only offer a conclusion which all of us already know, that the only way to assure good presidential decisions is to elect and support good presidents. For in mixing the context in which presidents and people in power operate in mixing all those ingredients, his style and standard, his values and vitality, his insights and outlook will make the crucial difference. A great presidential decision defies the laws of mathematics and exceeds the sum of all its parts. A great president is not the product of his staff, but the master of his house. This observation is applicable to decision makers in every profession. Good decisions, good leadership, does not pop up from the vacuum. It is a manifestation of wisdom. Wisdom is not something we can download from the internet or buy in a shop or earn. It is a gift from God. Remember Solomon's prayer for wisdom before he took up his leadership role. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, and able to discern between good and evil. For who can govern this, your great people? This is the secret of great leadership in any field, the awareness that all things, our interactions, belong to God. We are stewards of the gift we have. This is what made Lord Denning a great judge and a legend in his time. Lord Devlin once remarked that the secret of Lord Denning's attraction to the legal profession, as well as for the general public, was the belief that he opened the door to the law above the law. That law above the law is the wisdom of God, which Lord Denning was so aware of. Lord Bingham said, Lord Denning had this uncanny insight into the thoughts and values of the ordinary person. And we are talking here of the sense of the mysterious. And I recall 30 years ago, as a theological student at Oxford, having an inspiring conversation with him in his office in London. He talked in depth about his faith. In coming upon legal obstacles, it is not enough to keep your law books dry. It is as well to have the Bible ready to hand too. He said the Bible was the most tattered book in his library. He believed that without religion, there can be no morality, and without morality, there can be no law. And that if religion perished in the land, truth and justice would also. He believed modern society had strayed too far from the faith of our fathers and urged a return to it, for it is the only thing that would save us. In his book, The Closing Chapter, Lord Denning spoke candidly about his faith and its impact on his life at a legal service at the cathedral at Norwich. This is what he said. I would not be here unless I believed in God. My belief in God is in part due to my upbringing, to what I have been taught, and in part to what I have found out in going through life. That is the case with all knowledge. No man knows anything except what he has been taught and what he has found out for himself. The fundamental point in my experience is that there is a spirit in man quite different from his body and from his intellect, which, when it reaches its highest and best, is but the reflection of the Spirit of God. Now, I know nothing of theology, nor can I say that I have seen the sudden light of conversion, as some have, but I do know that in the great experiences of life, and in the small ones too, such strength as I have is of God. Witness is mine. Need I relate the experiences? Take the hard things. When faced with a task on which great issues depend, when high hopes lie shattered, when overwhelmed by grief, where can I turn to for help but God? take the joyful things they had just attempted and done, the happiness of family life, or the beauty of nature, where can I turn to in thankfulness but God? All experiences convince me not only that God is ever present, but also that it is by contact with the Spirit of God that the spirit of man reaches its highest and its best. We must now reach our bed. I have used the tools of trade, the great authors, the classics, great people, life happening all around us, as an inspiration to address our theme of law and religion in Africa, comparative practices, experiences and prospects. Now, what is it that we can learn from it all? Africa, as you are so aware, is not monochrome. It's a great ancient continent. It's very diverse. It has, as someone described it, it is like a pot of many colors. So the laws are a jumble of pieces, much like a jigsaw or a mosaic. Kashmiri law, Islamic law, Dutch law, English law, and so forth. All these have to be fitted together to form a single whole and developed to meet the context and conditions of the times. How is this best to be done? This is the question that this conference must address. Primarily, I can suggest that as humanity, and especially as Africans, we nurture our spirituality. It is the only power that can lift us up to our highest and best within and in society. Kofi Abrefa Busia, Prime Minister of Ghana from 1969 to 1972, was right when he wrote a book entitled Africa in Search of Democracy. And he placed first in his treatment of factors to be considered in Africa's search for democracy what he termed the religious heritage. He argued that for many people, the questions of religion seem irrelevant and out of place in discussing issues of modernization and progress. This attitude, he contended, was prejudicial to a proper appraisal of the problems of Africa as Africans saw them. This religious heritage defines all Africans. John Mbiti, a renowned African theologian, said Africans are naturally spiritual people. I think of the religious heritage not only derived from the so-called traditional religions, but also dating back to the first century. Thomas Orton, in his book, How Africa Shaped the Mind of Europe, draws to mind the contribution of some of the great church fathers, such as Cyprian, Augustine, Tertullian, Origen, all who were pillars of the African church and whose contribution helped form Christian culture. There is a myth that Christianity in Africa is foreign and was brought here by missionaries 300 or 400 years ago, when in fact it has been part of Africa's heritage for centuries. We also forget that much of Christian history occurred in Africa. And if you remove Africa out of the Bible and Christian memory, then you remove many important stories of salvation. This religious heritage can give immense confidence to help us as Africans, lawyers, religious leaders, much help to address Africa's challenges. This religious heritage is also what is termed as Ubuntu. And Ubuntu puts emphasis on our common humanity. I am because you are. And therefore, we all exist in community, and we must treat each other with respect and dignity. This respect for one another also means respect for the core values that hold us together. The nurturing of spirituality can instill a reverence for God. I'm just concluding with you. Thank you so much. This reverence for God, therefore, can instill of us a sense of integrity and honesty in people, not only to curb corruption, but also instill a sense of reverence for the law. And so, in short, what I have sought to say and conclude is simply that law and religion in Africa, in Concord, is a living expression of people's desire to create channels of cooperation. In other words, seeking to do the right thing at every turn. And religion focusing on the ultimate meaning and purpose in life so people can strive to live out to their highest and best potential. This is only possible with the gift of wisdom working in men and women who are wise and good, who are courageous and just, who love kindness and walk humbly with God. Such can bring about a respect for the rule of law and development for the people, of all God's people in Africa. This is the dream of God, and it is only our duty to realize it. Thank you very much for your attention.